You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
This is the Autosport Podcast. And just like that, the F1 teams have shown us their 2024 challenges. Well, that might be a bit of a stretch, as really we won't see the true cars until pre-season testing. However, that doesn't mean that we won't have anything to talk about, and I know just the people to chat to. And I'm Bryn Lucas, and joining me today is what our producer called Autosport F1's three musketeers, Alex Kalinorkas, Matt Kew, and Jake Boxall-Legg, aka JBL. Well, welcome, guys. How are you doing? The three musketeers. How are you?
Which musketeer am I?
I don't know them.
I've never read the seminal literature by Alexandre Dumas, so I've got no idea which one is which. But
do they link in with the man in the Iron Mask? I was listening to an excellent podcast about that the other day.
Bam. We've already gone off a massive, massive tangent. All I can think of is Dog Tanyan, because I don't know anything about the three musketeers.
Well, there's definitely three of us. Let's put it that. Let's leave it at that.
So I should just basically redo that intro and just say, welcome to my three random guests, JBL, Alex and Matt. How are you, gents?
Pretty good, thank you. Launch season's over. I don't have to write lengthy features now until the rest of the season where I do. But it's been fun. It's been interesting to see what's been going on with all the teams and what they want us to see with their cars. We'll see the full things in Bahrain. Yeah, it's been a bit of a long launch season.
Yeah, it's pretty much sums it up, JBL. It's obviously our busiest time of year until we get to December, when it's also the busiest time of year. But the overwhelming sort of takeaway is that I think it's just a bit of excitement until we, you know, get to qualifying in Bahrain, and it turns out that what on earth the Red Bull has done with its sort of Mercedes-like changes has put it 5 seconds a lap clear. But right now, I mean, the reality of what we saw last season hits home. But I'm considering that Red Bull could have just shown off an RB19 with a couple of stickers moved around, I'm more excited than I was expecting to be heading into the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think because it's a bit more of a step change than we're expecting. Is there that potential that Red Bull may have, you know, got it wrong? Or certainly because it's such a big change in that first sort of 3, 4, 5 races, they'll take a bit of time getting used to the car and be slightly more gettable because of that. You know, the optimism from the McLaren camp, the fact that it's such a big departure for Mercedes, like, it's, you know, on paper it's so unrealistic that they'll go straight after Red Bull, but because it is such a change, can they rectify their problems and, you know, re-establish themselves as a powerhouse? I probably won't include Ferrari and Aston Martin in that for reasons we'll get onto later, but, you know, it's almost absence makes the heart grow fonder, isn't it? We've forgotten how dominant Red Bull were last season. We've forgotten how we felt at this stage last year, and then Red Bull came out and creamed everyone. But we're excited at this point of the year anyway, so that's good. That's good.
Well, look, you guys have done this for quite some time. Quite a lot of different launches have happened. As you approach January, the middle of January, do you feel that tingle of excitement when the launch dates start to, you know, arrive on the calendar, JBL?
I think I'd kind of liken it to in a way, it's a little bit like Christmas with launch season. You know, you're finally unwrapping all of these cars, but equally at the same time, you're only seeing what they want you to see. But equally, yeah, it's pretty exciting because you kind of have in your head what each team ended 2023 with. And so you kind of are trying to anticipate the trends and go into 2024 and go, oh, what's everybody going to do? Who's going to innovate? Who isn't? And I think as well, but especially with the idea of convergence and teams closing in on each other with a pretty static rule set, you're kind of thinking, oh, who's going to make the big jump this year? Because yes, last year we had McLaren and Aston Martin close the gap massively. So you're like, oh, is someone else from the sort of pack behind going to do that as well? So yeah, I think there is that excitement for sure. Obviously, I'm hoping that we don't end up getting to like Miami or something and our hopes and dreams have been shattered. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, history has said convergence is a good thing. And even though Red Bull has dominated this rule set so far, there's, you know, if someone else makes a massive step and jumps over them, then things can change massively. So I'm optimistic.
Alex and Matt, you two both physically went to a couple of launches. And I remember I was talking to you, Matt, at the Sauber launch, and Alex was over your shoulder at one point making an appearance there too. So what's it like for you both going to the actual launches?
Yeah, they were good fun. Obviously, I'm still not quite sure why we were doing that from London's Guildhall. It was so incongruous, an F1 car to be in such a sort of an historic building, you know, and doing press conferences in the dungeon where Oliver Cromwell used to keep his horses.
I think I know why. I think it's because the Guildhall markets itself as we're a big event space, come and sit in our amazing medieval building. So I suspect they probably approached an agency who told the team. I mean, I don't know, but sorry, I feel like
as opposed to the perfect synergies, as someone in the Sauber marketing department might say.
I feel like my role on this podcast is just to live relentlessly in the real world. I don't know, like approaching launch season, yeah, I am excited. There is still that child inside of me, but we just, like, we've got memories of how good Red Bull were last year. It's like, this should be better, but it probably won't be because we just know how Formula One works. So yeah, it's an interesting time of year, let's put it that way.
And then there was the big one over in Vegas that I think John Noble described to me as, it was the best launch that nobody saw. It was just a bit weird that nobody was really there because it happened, you know, through the night for us guys. I mean, Matt, did you get across it at all?
Not really. It was, I thought it was pretty shambolic personally. I get first and foremost that F1 doesn't revolve around the UK, but European, and it's obviously trying to target growth in America, but European hardcore fans are the biggest element of F1's audience, so probably launching it when they're all fast asleep is fine. But from our side in the media, the timing was bad, the communication was bad, there was like absolutely no resource, there wasn't a Q&A with Laurent Mekies, Peter Bayer, whatever, so very like poor on information. Then the images went up early, you know, the team haven't even assigned themselves email addresses by the looks of it because the name was complex. You know, it used to be at, you know, communication person surname at alphatauri.com. Now there's none of that. So that was all a bit messy. Okay, I hope the 1,000 guests in Las Vegas had a great time. But that was Kendrick Lamar performing on Las Vegas Boulevard, and there was an F1 car launched about it, and it didn't make a splash. And then you've got Visa and Cash App and Hugo Boss as these blue chip sponsors. And yeah, it barely made a mark. I thought that was a massive opportunity missed for three big corporations that will want return on their investment for having their stickers on an F1 car.
I'm astonished that they got 1,000 people to that event in Las Vegas in Super Bowl week, because that was happening at the end of that week. I mean, I kind of see the logic of, yeah, this is the sort of the greatest, biggest show, well, according to America, in the world, but obviously we know it's not, because there are much more watched things than the Super Bowl when you take everything else into account. But yeah, so I can kind of see the logic there, but yeah, it was a bit of a strange one, and it does sum up sort of the big theme for us, because I don't know, like, I guess for a lot of the listeners, we're approaching it from more of a sort of, you know, how we view it as a through our jobs through the media, but there was not a lot of information forthcoming, definitely from VCARB and from a lot of the teams. Actually, that seemed to be a theme going on through the year, that you know, it's access seemed to be even less than there ever was. It's up to the teams. It's as they want. They can do exactly what they like. But like, it's more interesting when the teams are even a little bit more open. Now, of course, that can come back to bite them. I think there's a very good reason, or two very good reasons, why Mercedes weren't doing any media, like other than sort of in-house media. For their launch. One, obviously, they didn't want all the questions being about Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari. But two, I think if you look back on what they were saying at the start of 2022 and 2023, I think the comments came back to bite them, really, that especially in 2022 when it was, oh, Lewis Hamilton saying, you haven't seen nothing yet, basically, like, you thought 2021 was good, 2022 is going to be even better, and then it was a complete disaster. So there is some logic from the team's point of view, but it definitely felt like there was a concerted effort by more of them than ever not to say anything, which is fine. They can do that. But we know from our point of view, it makes things a lot more interesting. And I assume that extends to the fans as well. People want to know what's been going on over the winter. They want to know what the thoughts ahead are. So, yeah, maybe that could be something next year the teams could think about going back to.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, there's not much of an excuse. Alex and I were sort of joking at the Red Bull launch. But like, none of this sits within the budget cap. This is all marketing and PR exercise, these glossy launches and wherever they are. So it's not as if renting a guild pool is a healthy chunk out of your, you know, front wing allowance or whatever. So there's no excuse. F1, if you're pragmatic, F1 will not be more popular than it is at the moment if Red Bull continue to dominate. Drive to Survive's had its moment where people were stuck indoors during lockdowns, glued to Hamilton versus Verstappen. We don't have a title grudge match anymore. It's had its peak of popularity. So I think it's a no-brainer that you absolutely like plow headfirst into that and exploit it while you can with glitzy, disruptive things, as irritating, you know, sort of, again, marketing people might say. So you double down on that rather than drop a press release. I get, like, McLaren dropped a press release because, you know, low-key launch, they did their livery reveal already. Andrea Stella is, you know, fantastically pragmatic, probably doesn't want the distraction, and to, as Alex has alluded to with Mercedes, you know, set expectations up here only for them to, for the crash back down. But I thought, yeah, it was a pretty lackluster launch season apart from, well, Red Bull was a solid ending to it. But yeah, some, again, sorry to wind back to RB, but a couple of complaints I further have is that they are associated Red Bull like a marketing colossus. You know, at the Red Bull thing, we're watching BMX riders on half pipes, you know, tethered to hot air balloons and canyon divers and whatever, because the marketing stunts are phenomenal and they completely dropped the ball there and launched a new era, a new identity, a new chapter for this team and all its new sponsors with a throwback livery. I thought that was particularly egregious this year.
Just, I know you mentioned the very start of that point, but about noses, I think one of my favourite moments of launch season was someone as incredibly intelligent and brilliant as Dan Fallows talking about the front nose on the Aston Martin. I thought it really tickled me.
Obligatory mention of the rear nose.
Through all this, JBL, you've sat there very quietly just stroking your beard. I mean, what have you got? I'm sure you've got something to say about these launches.
Oh, it's more the, you know, I let the rest of the guys go and have fun at the launches. I quite like to look at what the teams have done with the launch spec cars. We know that they're not showing us everything. And I think, you know, commenters on the internet think, oh, we're taking it at face value and that kind of thing. It's not true. We're just, you know, analysing what they show us. And it has been interesting to see certain trends throughout the kind of development of the 2024 cars, and then the cars that followed those trends last season going for something completely different. So from a technical standpoint, at least, you know, again, the teams are only showing us what they want to show us, and in Bahrain they'll have something up their sleeve, no doubt, you know, because Red Bull has been openly shown its RB20 in the most secretive way possible. There are certain things that have just been, you know, obfuscated so that we can't see, you know, the side pod inlets, for example, various things like that. So teams are sort of being very, there's a lot of misdirection in this. You know, I'm surprised nobody's hired Penn and Teller for their launch show, such as the misdirection on offer. So yeah, it's been interesting. I think watching some of the launches, it's weird because we go, oh, we want these big glitzy launches. Yeah, everybody talks about the 1997 McLaren Spice Girls launch. And then there was that period of time where nobody wanted to spend money on it and they were just shoving cars out of the garage. We were like, oh no, bring back those glitzy launches. We have them now. We're just like, just show the car. Jesus Christ, come on, stop pontificating. So I think we'll always be a little bit over expectant of what we get this season, over a launch season.
V-Carb are in the right place for Penn and Teller, at least.
You just nicked my line, right. Alex. I was going to say, come on, that was the Vegas bit. It's got to be. I actually saw Penn and Teller. This is some completely off piece. I saw Penn and Teller and Hammersmith last year.
Oh, I thought one of them was dead.
No, they were both. Well, unless it was the best bit of misdirection I've ever seen. I mean, they were certainly both there on the stage. I mean, the one who doesn't talk still wasn't talking. But you know, it was all right. It was an all right show. So maybe they'd have to step up to Derren Brown or something. That'd be quite cool, wouldn't it? Derren Brown car launch. Anyway, let's move on, shall we, to the cars themselves, because we've been yakking about these launches and we haven't really talked about the cars. First question, I'm going to go straight to you on this one, Matt, if you don't mind. How much carbon is too much carbon?
There is too much carbon. Alpine's probably the worst offender of that, isn't it? Like, Aston Martin have been pretty good, because if you look sort of top down, they've got reams of this stuff, all exposed carbon fiber weave everywhere. But as you see it side on, or where the TV cameras are, it's been quite cutely placed in like the gullies and recesses and well hidden. So that's good. But I think I was having this conversation with our colleague Johnny Noble at the Red Bull launch yesterday as we film it. And that Alpine, I with all the exposed carbon fiber, I think that's a 200 mile an hour billboard to everyone that they're again lost, like technically, because they have had to go to such extreme measures to cut on the weight. You know, we can see that everyone else is starting to sort of lacquer up again. You know, Mercedes with the silver, Red Bull aren't doing, as far as we can tell from that launch car, they are not doing the trick where, you know, most of it's that dark matte purple, but then they have a few blotches here and there because they're just bringing it down. Other teams seem to be on top of it. The Stake Sauber F1 car, when we see it in proper sunlight, we'll be able to tell what's actually painted and what's exposed carbon fiber, a bit like the Black Mercury last year. So Alpine was the most offensive. It's a poor livery anyway, but I actually think that screams, despite them being more modest and saying we have learned it's a new car concept, I think that screams to me that they're still struggling to get with the weight. But yeah, we need a splash of color, a splash of differentiation. So I find it a bit like a Formula One cars are prototypes, so you should be able to see the components, think that they're on the ragged edge, and a bit of carbon fiber weave is fine with that. But they're also, you know, moving billboards. When you've got enough, you know, sort of offense being taken at the V-Carb name and a Stake Sauber kick, whatever it is, Alpine get it right, and then lose it all with a sort of an incoherent livery. So I think a bit of a mixed opportunity. And if you want to attract all the blue chip sponsors, you want to stand out on stage. But if you know BWT and that pink livery are only getting sort of 50% of body work, then they're losing out as well. So yeah, not great.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head on a few things. Like, there just seems to be a bit of an edge running through this launch season. Like, people frustrated with the Sauber name, with the V-Carb name. Oh, aren't we supposed to call it RB? This is the thing. We don't even know what we're supposed to call it. Like, it's ridiculous. But well, yeah, it's silly. It's very frustrating. But I think just going back to the carbon fiber thing, I think Alpine really did themselves absolutely no favors by not reading the room and putting out that stupid meme thing where they just pointed to various bits of carbon fiber and tried to make it all cutesy. I thought that was really stupid, because it's not even a livery. It's just a car with some splashes of paint on it. And I have to say, although the Sauber one looks more interesting because it's green, that's exactly what it is as well. It's a, I think you and I said it at the launch, it's like a video game basic livery that you can create yourself. It's not particularly sophisticated. It just sort of, it stands out because it's different, really. And I think, you know, on that topic, I really want the FIA to regulate this. I know ultimately you don't want more rules, but I think it's such an easy win. What other cliche can I use? It's low hanging fruit. It's just, it makes it more interesting if the cars don't all look like bare carbon fiber. It's just not that difficult. You know, JBL, you hit it right. Like, the Red Bull's got a livery on it. Ferrari's got a livery on it. Aston Martin's got a livery on it. And again, the second week of launches, the one that's just ending now, sort of saved it in terms of the livery stakes. And Mercedes is a bit of a different case because obviously, you know, that they were already running a black livery, but I think they made it nicer by putting the silver back on. So I'd like to see something done to avoid it in the future. But also, like, coloured carbon fibre exists. I used to work for a company that did like PR and comms for this company called Hypetex. And like, it wasn't a very big thing. It was more for road cars. I think they had a deal with Land Rover at one point. But it does exist. I mean, presumably it looks terrible or it weighs slightly too much. That's why the F1 teams haven't gone around it. But it's not new technology, but it is possible to do that.
Yeah, I think, well, because I'd written a plus column for this during week one of launches, just because we were just getting carbon livery, carbon livery, carbon livery. And it was like, is this going to end? Because we'd had, I think, what, we'd had Haas, we'd had the McLaren livery launch, we'd had the Sauber, and we'd had the Alpine. And the Alpine was just the one that pushed me over the edge, like, to a degree at least. Because we kind of expected this from Haas. We kind of expected Sauber to be, you know, it's historically gone with sort of like black / grey liveries in the 90s and in the sort of like mid-2000s. So, mid-2010s. So I was kind of expecting it from them. From Alpine, where you've got a defined, clear and defined brand of this sort of metallic blue that's been in use throughout its racing efforts for decades, to turn around and just come up with something so bland, it just felt like a little bit of an affront. So yeah, it's been a lot nicer this second week of launches to actually have a little bit of colour on the grid, have some teams actually sort of putting some effort in. Ferrari looks good. Mercedes looks very good this year. There's still bare carbon on it, but it's a little bit, it's just nicer. It's sort of like a blend of old and new. I think teams have sort of elevated this in the second week, but I'm just hoping that some teams can shed a little bit of weight so that we can get some paint back on the car. And if the FIA mandated, 60% of something of all visible faces on the car must be painted, then that's a pretty good way around it, I think.
I don't think we're overdoing it either when it comes to the livery chat, because, like, basically, like, why do so many people like Ferrari? Because it's the red cars they saw when they were younger. Like, okay, that's not deep dive statistical analysis for you, but it's true. It's one of the big reasons why they're so popular. So, like, come on, teams. If you honestly, why do I care about Alpine? What, like, it's like Haas getting rid of Gunther Steiner. Why do I care about them? If you're not going to put any effort into making your car look interesting, I don't care.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, Ferrari has to be red. And if you're the Silver Arrows, surely you need to have some silver somewhere on the car, Matt.
Yeah, I agree. I've sort of already said my piece on it, but it makes the car look unfinished. So a gripe I have is sort of when you see white racing cars, okay, you have martini stripes, but it's unfinished. If it's white, there's other colors, go pick them. It stands out much better. And it's the same with F1 with carbon fiber at the minute. And again, I wonder what, you know, Alpine, again, to come back to you, the thing that made it almost worse is the fact that they had a fully painted, really, like, aesthetically pleasing World Endurance car next to it. So the F1 car looked particularly poor, because that's, you see that with the regulations there, balance of performance, you can equalize the weight. You see, that's what a livery designer would do if they had sort of a clean sheet of paper, and then you'd have something very similar on the F1 car. So there's like a relationship between the two. They look vaguely related. And then someone's basically gone over it with that eraser tool in paint to bring it back down to the weight limit. And I actually wonder what the sponsors think, because obviously BWT, you know, that bright, bright pink, and that they've had through the you know, since they were first linking up with Force India and then Racing Point. And then at least they had the special liveries in their sort of early relationship with Alpine and you know, last year as well. Although I think, from my understanding, there was a bit of a mess up there, and they were, BWT were sort of oversold on the number of livery changes they had. But where you go from blue to pink back to blue, that counts as like two livery changes rather than one. So I think BWT were anticipating a few more races than they got last year. But when you have that colour, that is their brand, and you're paying for that, you know, sponsorship deal, which is not a title sponsorship deal because no one refers to them as BWT Alpine, and then you're losing loads of like pink real estate, and the same for other sponsors as well and other teams, I think you feel a bit shortchanged. But as Alex says, you know, British Racing Green, that's something Aston Martin's lent into. The red of Ferrari, the Mercedes Silverado, it's all coming away. And it is your chance to differentiate yourself a little bit more. So I just think it looks a bit naff. It looks like basically someone's not finished their homework on time.
I like a white car, by the way, and white shoes, but, you know, I'm probably just a terrible person.
What, high heels, is that, Alex?
No.
That's the logical comeback.
It's stilettos, yeah.
Actually, you know what, looking at the team names, and I don't want to bang on too much about the team names, but it's a bit of a commentator's nightmare.
I mean, the RB thing, definitely. Well, we don't know what to call it. We've called it two different things in the podcast already.
Well, I just think, what happens when Daniel Ricciardo goes toe-to-toe with Valtteri Bottas and, you know, the Visa Cash App RB takes the stake F1 team, kicks Sauber on the inside of turn three? You know, how's the commentator ever going to get all that out before the end of the race?
But also, you know, oh, the Visa's on fire. I mean, like, it sounds nonsensical. And also, if you're Visa, you don't want your product on fire. It's just so dumb.
Well, I have to admit to not knowing until I saw, like, one of their billboards with Ricciardo and Tsunoda speaking in front of it. The Visa and Cash App are different things. Like, maybe that makes me out to look a bit of an idiot for not realising. But they're different. I thought that was, like, Visa trying to market a specific thing. It's such a mess.
I kept calling it the Visa card app when I was trying to do the recording. The amount of times I had to retake because I kept going the Visa card app, because every time I think of Visa, I think of the card that's in my wallet, and I really struggled. It's a bit of a problem. I'm sure we'll get over it.
And obviously, you know, Formula One and the FIA ultimately have, you know, some steer on these entry lists, Formula One in particular with the naming rights. And even their own website, their comms refer to it as RB only, which just sort of undermines that whole thing. But, okay, we have some idea, and I'm sure our listeners do, because we're sort of dyed-in-the-wall F1 fans. But I bet you a casual viewer thinks that RB stands for Red Bull, not Racing Bulls, when they try to do the similar Racing Point thing where, you know, on logos and headed paper, it's sort of a blank canvas to do what you like. But again, where's the communication? And who thought of it? And why did three or four levels of management then sign off without someone going, actually, this is a terrible idea?
Well, presumably because they're big, they're getting a lot of money in return.
Money,
but,
yeah.
Again, but as that was what I was going to comment on, the flip side of all of this, right, is that every now and then I'm walking through Broccoli in South London, and there's a particular news agent that's got a MoneyGram sign above the door. I would have totally not even registered it before whenever that came in the end of 2022 with Haas, right? Like, if Formula One still does have, okay, fine, it's my area of work. It's obviously going to come home to me maybe a little bit more than other people, but it demonstrates that it does still have value for companies getting in and wanting to put their name out of there. Although, I mean,
shop sponsored by MoneyGram.
If you don't know what a Visa is by now, though, like, I mean, what hope is there?
I'm just going with the quite a sort of old team on the entry lists back in the day. Brabham always used to appear as Motor Racing Development. Nobody called them that. Everyone just called them Brabham. And if you look at the chassis name for RB, it says RB. I'm calling them RB. No Visa contactless stuff.
I'll tell you what it's done. It's ruined my notes. Every time I write down RB for Red Bull, I confuse myself. Clearly an idiot.
Oh,
clearly an idiot.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Did they not think about the notes and shorthand? Come on, like,
just be lowercase R.
No one ever thinks
just
about the notes.
Lowercase R. Do you know what? Actually, the RB thing happens in football as well, because RB Leipzig, the RB is owned by Red Bull, but the RB doesn't stand for Red Bull. It stands for something else. So when
Rasen
RB Salzburg,
Sport.
That's right. So when
maybe
RB Salzburg,
RB stands for.
That's probably what it is, you know. And it also means that when they play in the Champions League, if they play in the Champions League, they can keep the RB name, whereas Salzburg can't, because that's Red Bull. So they have to change their shirt and they're just called Salzburg. So there's loopholes all over the place, aren't there? And we know what Red Bull are like. They're very, 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 very good as a company at exploiting certain loopholes when it comes to their sporting exploits in a very, very positive way, Matt.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe this is a game plan all along to come up with such a catastrophically awful team name that you spend 10 minutes talking about it on a podcast to give all their sponsors a bit of mileage. So maybe this is a game plan and they're ahead of us.
Well, they've just caught us, haven't they, RB? They've managed to catch us by the particulars there. Now, let's move on to the cars themselves, because we haven't actually really talked about what we've learnt from the cars. So let's kick things off, JBL. Anything that surprised you, anything that stood out in particular, or are most of them just reincarnations of their 2023 cars?
Well, I think we were expecting teams to be you know, indulging in a little bit of subterfuge and a little bit of hiding stuff. And they did. We've sort of discussed that. But I think, you know, there were a lot of things that I wasn't necessarily expecting. I was expecting certain trends. And I think, you know, I wrote a couple of magazine pieces in the season review and look ahead, expecting that we'd kind of see a lot of Red Bull influenced cars. And sure, we have. But I was also expecting Red Bull to kind of move the game on with their own concepts. So for them yesterday with the RB20, I think obviously a little bit of recency bias here, but that does spring to mind just because, A, they were so, you know, careful not to show certain parts of the car. Didn't want to show the floor. Even in their launch renders, we don't really know what the side pull inlets look like. They were, you know, doing their absolute level best to hide that. I think we've got a general idea of what the car looks like, and there's a lot of things there that were seen previously on the Mercedes W14. So again, it seems like they found a way to get it to work. So that was certainly a surprise of launch season. I think McLaren, as Q and Alex have already said, kept it sort of very, very low key with their launch. And when asked why McLaren was so at liberty to hide stuff, Lando Norris had just said, because we can. We don't want to give away performance at this stage, you know, because, you know, teams are going to be rapidly prototyping parts that they might see and might like, and with a view to sticking it on their own car. So that's why there's so much sort of cloak and dagger at this time of year. Teams can put things in CAD programs, 3D print stuff, or mock things up very, very quickly. So yeah, it is part of the launch season. As I say, this is why teams only show you what they want to show you, because they don't want other teams to kind of get a march on them, try and get the advantage. It's a hugely interesting time of year because you kind of have to read between the lines a little bit. That's kind of the fun of it, I suppose.
Yeah. On that, I mean, like, how is it for generations, teams have employed photographers deliberately just to take, you know, spy shots or focus, you know, specific tech shots of rival cars so they can copy things. Like, it's nothing's new about this in Formula One, but I think it's particularly frustrating when it comes to the putting like potentially fake items on cars. Like the floor thing, absolutely fine, because honestly, if you're just looking at a picture of the car ahead of season testing, who cares? I mean, it's the most important aerodynamic piece of the car, and JBL and tech writers out there and things like that, I'm sure it's irritating not to be able to see it, but that to me is fine. There's a couple of things I do. It's part of me just worries a little bit that Red Bull are just absolutely pulling a fast one, and that the car is going to look nothing like that when it hits the track in Bahrain testing. But I think probably the reason why is because Sauber last year put out that fake serrated floor edge. They admitted it later. It was just, oh, we was having a bit of fun. And probably people might think I'm being too high and mighty and a bit sort of, you know, sanctimonious about it. But I just thought that was pretty despicable, to be honest. Like, everyone's excited at this time of year. Everyone wants to see new cars. Everyone wants to see new ideas. And to just have a laugh with people, I just thought that's not very nice, to be honest. Like, it's sort of treating, you know, the people that really love Formula One, the people that buy Autosport, the people that listen to the Autosport podcast, the people that want to know the details of every new car. I just thought that was really disingenuous from Sauber. And I was glad to hear them say at the launch that Matt and I were at that, you know, everything we were seeing, while it wasn't necessarily the exact specifications they'd be running and testing, there was nothing like that had been faked. Because I don't know, that is just sort of, I just think it's, why treat ultimately your customers, the people that love you, why treat them so badly?
And potentially not the team of the 10 to be cocky about their design and aero
exactly.
concepts, only for them to tool around at the back of the grid.
Wow, excellent. We just lit the touch paper there. The Visa just caught fire. No, something just happened. I don't know what it was. But now the launches themselves, I mean, where do you think these launches rate in the whole history of Formula One launches?
I thought the Sauber one was pretty good to start with. It was, like, even if it was a mismatched venue, what a venue. You know, the fact that Alex and I were stood there underneath some, you know, just beautiful sort of masonry, you know, sort of rubbing shoulders with Aguero to get close and whatever. What a venue, and that sort of the clash between, you know, all the like dim lights sort of trying to obscure the architecture, and then the green laser lights bouncing off everything. I thought it was really well done. You know, the fact that they'd sort of commissioned special medieval lookalike portraits of Bottas and Joe, I thought it was really well thought through. And sort of like I said earlier, and as JBL referred to, we have had such a sort of fallow period of launches, you know, in a turbocharger, it's just right, roll them out in front of the garage in the first day of Barcelona and then crack on. So I'm pleased, sort of reveling in this sort of small chapter where we get some good launches. Red Bull again, I thought was well done. Sort of their look at me as a marketing company. Look at our 20 years in F1, our success, and the backdrop, the venue, that sort of like, you know, the in vogue sort of semi industrial looking setup with a, you know, Red Bull painted Humvee and whatever. I thought it was really well done. I sort of get both sides of it, that it's really underwhelming when Ferrari do a 1 minute video, but I guess you get straight to the point. And I also get, you know, Red Bull's was drawn out. The production was sort of a good half an hour long, but because they are trying to celebrate their history and give some recognition to some partners and some people along the way, I sort of get both sides of it. Because if you're doing viewer retention rate, if you whip the covers off the Red Bull and then go to interviews, I bet the readership and the engagement just sort of cliff dives, as I'm sure Red Bull will appreciate that, nosedives. So there's no perfect recipe, but I think the fact that some teams did make an effort should be celebrated. And also like the Alpine launch in itself wasn't too bad, because they've gone, we did the big distracting thing with Zinedine Zidane and Nicola Adams and everything in Printworks in London last year. And, you know, we gave a really convincing tech talk and then we're absolutely nowhere and don't we look foolish. So I think Alpine judged their tone right by doing a much lower key thing and introducing their other motorsport, you know, launch with the wet car. So I thought that wasn't too bad. But yeah, I suppose, you know, McLaren just dropping a press release and then images with a couple of different flaws then doesn't really hit the note.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. The sort of question is, well, are these launches better or worse or whatever than they have been in the past? It's sort of a bit redundant. I mean, JBL mentioned the famous McLaren Spice Girls one. I'm fairly sure that happened before Q was born. So how can we properly compare and contrast? But, you know, the one thing I will say is that anyone who complains about a live stream where they talk for half an hour and then reveal the car, I mean, just what are you doing with your lives? Like, it's a company trying to do its own thing. Let them do it. Like, just because you want to see one thing, you'll see it eventually. Like, have a tiny bit of patience and a bit of perspective. But yeah, just some funny sort of takeaways from launch season. Like, everything always leaks and there's always something ridiculous going on. Like, a company as amazing at marketing as Red Bull is, we were there, Matt, and like, they were arranging chairs around Christian Horner and things like that. And it was all like nobody knew where to go, what was going to happen. It was all just a bit delightfully chaotic. And also, the images leaked online. It turned out you could download them from Red Bull's own image site, like, easily. Like, what on earth was going on there?
I think we're never going to get back to that kind of 90s excess of, you know, That I guess that Spice Girls launch, you know, the whole launch cars in ridiculous locations. I think there was one year in 2001 where Benetton launched its car on a gondola in Venice. Which is a terrible car, but it was an interesting launch.
Was it 08 where McLaren built theirs as their launch? They actually built their F1 car, didn't they?
God. Yeah, they did. 2011, I think it was. I don't think you're gonna get back to that level of excess, because, you know, COVID happened. People have realised I've probably spent their money on better stuff. You know, when I was still covering Formula E, I went to a couple of their launches, and they were throwing quite a bit of money at it. You know, there was a Jaguar launch that was very glitzy in London. There was a Nissan launch in Madrid where they were, you know, flying out journalists and stuff like that, and really going for it. So it's interesting to see those teams in a smaller budget championship going hell for leather with the launches, and Formula One teams being relatively circumspect with how they do it. I think the best way around it, the best of both worlds, is to have launched the car itself in a really interesting way. not just have like, I'm not a massive fan of the whole spiel for 30 minutes and then launch the car. Equally, I think punting the car out and just go, there's the car, done, right, that's onto Bahrain. I think that's equally a little bit dull. I think just, you know, do the launch or launching the car itself in an interesting way. Then you have your media stuff. I think that's the best way around it. I don't know, like launch a car into space or something, like, you know, crack on, you got the money.
Can we all agree that the way to not do it, though, is what Ferrari did last night as we record, which is put out a promo sort of little clip of their of the 2024 car doing a practice pit stop, and they uploaded the wrong clip, so the front left is slow by like 2 seconds.
I mean, well, listen, look, right, no, presumably they just filmed every Ferrari pit stop that happened and went
that
wrong.
That was the best one.
That's exactly what Ferrari does, right?
We did 50 takes and that was the best one.
Well, listen, before we move on to Bahrain, tell me with the launches, and I'll start with you, Alex, on this. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I can't believe I've done. I'm sorry. Go on. What would you like to see? We're keeping that in. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you really, really want. Come on.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah, fair enough. Can I tell you what I don't want rather than what I really want? Because ultimately, you're never gonna please everyone. And I do get it. If you're just sort of, you know, if you're a Formula One fan and you just wanna, you know, Red Bull say they're launching their car at 8, you get your phone out because you want to see it there, and then you have to sit through half an hour. I do understand that that's frustrating, right? Wasn't trying to sort of minimize that, but what I don't want is a big event. Say, I don't know, central London, central New York, whatever, where all the teams gather and they all reveal their cars one by one, for the simple reason that it will, what, kill our websites? Like, that's the, sorry to, again to bring the realities of our jobs into this, but I don't want a centralized, here's everything happening at once, because, you know, that it would make it very practical. It would potentially make other things easier. It may work for a lot of fans, I don't know, but from our point of view, that would be a disastrous idea and must not happen, which almost certainly means it will.
I don't think it will. I think it behooves F1 to, you know, be at these launches and its broadcast partners as well, and for everything to just be in one day and just go, right, there's all the cars, right, we'll see you in 2 weeks for Bahrain. I think that would probably hurt them as well.
And who would pay for it as well? Like, F1's not going to pay for something if it doesn't have to.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to be like a Las Vegas, everyone's on an elevator and go, oh, here's car one.
I've just said that, though. I mean, if Aramco or whoever offered enough money, they'd do it. So that's the reality, the worry of the modern times, isn't it?
And what about yourself then, Matt? You've been to two launches this year, so presumably you just want to go to more launches where there's lots of nice food and drink.
I'm afraid the switch to dairy free has left me quite limited in my options, so the food sort of passes me by these days. I thought Ferrari's was quite good last year, the sort of nothing, hear the engine and it flies out of the garage. That's really good. We obviously now know, with the benefit of hindsight, that Sainz and Leclerc's radio messages were either like scripted or dubbed over, because we know that from their first laps in a shakedown at Fiorano, they actually didn't really like it at all, and this car feels much better at saying, wow, isn't it brilliant? But I thought that was like a really bold, generally like risky launch, because there's a car, you know, there's a chance the car breaks down or Leclerc bins it in a gravel. I thought that was like really, really bold, and it spoke of a confidence that they definitely shouldn't have had, as it turned out. But I really like that. I thought that was a good take on it, but I suppose that relies on Silverstone selling, you know, the national circuit to McLaren, the international circuit to Mercedes, putting Aston Martin on the Stowe circuit or whatever, to have, not everyone has their own private racetrack. But I like that. I thought that was a good take on it.
Now, next week, testing kicks off in Bahrain. JBL, I hear you're heading out there. What are we looking to or hoping to see come testing? 3 days is all they've got.
3 days, but then a Grand Prix the following weekend, so it's going to be a busy few days. First of all, we're going to actually see the real Williams, because that hasn't been launched yet. They did a livery launch.
I forgot about them.
We forgot about that, didn't we? allegedly a livery launch in New York, but that studio, honestly, could have been anywhere. They did have something in the Puma store on a show car, but you know, they were very, very, again, a lot of subterfuge is the wrong word, but being very, very sneaky.
It's a nice word,
with,
though. It's a good word.
It is a nice word.
I like words.
Being very, very sneaky with not showing their car. So maybe Williams is going to turn up with something ridiculous. So we'll see that. We'll see what the Red Bull RB20 actually is and whether it persists with its interesting side pod solution, or as the speculation goes, whether they turn up with a zero pod and surprise everybody. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see a lot more from McLaren as well. I think all the teams realistically, maybe except Haas, are going to turn up with something a little bit different, and are going to move on their cars from the launch spec. And Bahrain, as well, you know, I've done a few pre-season tests in my time. It is long days of a lot of laps, and a lot of that day will be doing media sessions and stuff like that, because it'll be the first time all year we've had to talk to some of the drivers. Other parts of it will be feeding our brethren on the desks, doing Autosport Live with tidbits of information, witty repartee and things like that. So it's going to be, I'm looking forward to it actually. It's going to be pretty hectic 3 days, but it should be quite fun.
Well, we're all going with you, JBL, but I'm just delighted I don't have to drive in Bahrain. That's Matt's job this year. That'll be all the people
fight
going
chaos with chaos.
I'm intrigued to see what your approach is. But yeah, no more for me having to deal with people going the wrong way around roundabouts or just randomly driving across the desert. That instantly makes my week of testing a lot less stressful. So that's good.
I wasn't aware all three of you were going out. I think in my notes I've just got JBL, you're heading out.
JBL's being left there. Q and I are coming home after testing.
Oh, you're lucky devils. Both of you are coming home afterwards. I mean, it is quite a frightening place to drive around, isn't it, Bahrain?
Yeah, I've seen everything there. You can see it all in about half a day. There's the Tree of Life, which is a tree. That's about it, really. lots of desert, lots of oil wells. Oh, I haven't seen the mosque.
Paid.
Might go and see the mosque
and
the souk.
By the Bahrain Tourist Board.
I mean, have more things then. Have more things if you want people to talk about more things.
Alonso has been fairly openly critical about 3 days of testing, hasn't he? I said about, you know, 3 days of testing is 1.5 days each. He's been fairly, you know, open about it.
Sergio Perez answered it brilliantly when that was put to him yesterday. He was like, look, we've got 24 races. Where do you expect them to find the time? That more than anything, I think he probably was doing that typical driver thing of, oh, I'm already traveling too much. I think it's more just, where do they fit it in? Like, F1's gone down the route of, we'll take all these races because we want all the money, and it comes at the expense of something like a few more days testing in Bahrain or the traditional starter in like Barcelona or a European circuit. Now, the other reason is that I assume this year it's the same. Aramco pays for the Bahrain test because its branding is all over it. So it's commercial decisions trumping anything, you know, other more sensible reasons. But I do agree with Perez's point that, like, just where are you going to find the time? Otherwise, you don't have an off season.
And it would also be a tiny, tiny bit out of step with the sprint race justification, wouldn't it? Only have one FP1 because then it's jeopardy. The big teams might not get their setup. Yeah, but if they had 9 days of testing at Jerez, Barcelona and Bahrain, then they're going to know what to do with their car anyway.
I do think they should, that's another thing Alonso said, I do think they should be allowed to run 20 cars in testing. Like, like we've all been Formula E correspondents, right? We've all been to Valencia. They do run all the cars. Like, it would make sense to do that in Formula One, I would say.
Formula E testing is a lot more interesting because you get like a pretend race.
Oh, they do have races, don't they? Yeah,
they do. I mean, they're not real and people end up pitting halfway through, but you do actually, you know, they actually try in their shortened sojourn around the Valencia Ricardo Tormo circuit, which actually I quite like as a circuit. It's quite nice. That's neither here nor
there. No setting fire to the Bahrain pit lane, please.
So presumably, guys, you're looking at, when you go out to Bahrain, or hoping to see maybe some changes from what you saw on some of these livery and car reveals. You're going to see some changes to the front end, to the front nose, and maybe even the rear nose.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm just worried that Red Bull's just conned us all with what they revealed yesterday. But I mean, hey, look, I was flippantly joking about Williams, but genuinely, like, it's just like it's a crowded launch season, and if you're going to do what Williams did, definitely what Haas did, you get shoved down the order in terms of what people particularly care about. So, you know, there is jeopardy with just doing the whole livery only thing. And actually, just on things like Williams, I'm more intrigued by like the future of Alex Albon and things like that than anything particularly the team might have produced. Simply because what have they shown us recently that's particularly interesting? I go back again to those sort of aspersions cast about the sophistication of its floor compared to the Red Bulls halfway through last year. That was utterly ridiculous because the pictures showed two different completely things. But, you know, until Williams shows us something interesting, it's hard to get all that excited about them. The thing that frustrates me about testing all the time is that it becomes, oh, what do you think is going to happen? And then it's wait for qualifying. And then it'll get to qualifying the Bahrain race. I was no. This is the track surface is too abrasive here. You've got to get to a normal circuit, not Saudi Arabia, obviously, because that ridiculous place is not a normal circuit. Oh, Melbourne's an outlier as well. You've got to get a full, selection of different tracks, and the things will play out as they normally do. But I guess the most interesting thing is, has Red Bull, is it an Icarus moment? Is it hubris? Is it we're going to do that thing Mercedes thought they could do, are they risking it all? The flip side of that is let's hear what Adrian Newey said yesterday when he spoke about the shakedown. The car performed as expected, so i.e. it wasn't breaking its floor because it was suddenly porpoising all the time. Like, that to me suggests a team that knows what it's doing and is supremely confident.
It's almost like Newey saying to Mercedes, look, okay, if you wanted to go down this route, here's how you do it, and here's how you do it well.
Oh, absolutely. We know what happened with Mercedes is that they, shift to ground effect, put massive emphasis on the floor. So they thought, let's get as much of the floor, exposed as possible so it can do all the hard work and we'll have this tiny body work. But they obviously simulated it, slammed to the ground in their perfect wind tunnel conditions, and perfect wind tunnel conditions don't exist on a real world racing track with lumps and bumps. So for last year, they designed the W14 to sit much higher up, but they found when it sat much higher up, there was a performance ceiling. It couldn't go as fast as it wanted to. So it then sort of found a halfway house where, therefore, rather than being in a Goldilocks sweet spot, everything was running in a state of compromise. So maybe if they'd designed the 2024 car to sit in that Goldilocks spot and everything to work around it, they would have finally got there. But I can, you can see why they abandoned that concept. And Red Bull, as I said to you, Alex, at the Red Bull launch yesterday, we're privileged to go on the grid at F1 races, and we see Adrian Newey there with his clipboard making notes about the Williams and the Mercedes. Well, this is what he's doing. He's gone, that moment in a beautiful mind where he just visualizes how it all works. That's what he's seeing with the air in a way we can't. And he thought, yeah, that works. And I think that's excellent. I think it angers enough people. I think it's entertaining that they've gone down the Mercedes route. Obviously, there's still a few bits shrouded in secrecy. We know that McLaren sent out different floors in the images. Red Bull have deliberately sort of coloured out the side pod inlets, although Alex and I got to see them a little bit at the launch. The floor, where it was sort of curvaceous Formula One floor until you got halfway down the side pod, and then they basically whacked a a massive great steel girder on there.
It was like a slab of carbon fibre, wasn't it? It was enormous.
Yeah. If you ever buy something like delicate and square, it comes with a big polystyrene around it to like protect the edges. It was like one of those. So again, when they reveal that floor, I'm not going to understand what the airflow is doing necessarily, but it'll be, is that going to look radically different to whatever comes out of Williams, Mercedes? I want Ferrari, are they going to get to testing? Leclerc and Sainz have a couple of spins go, no, our insistence at not revising our suspension has actually turned out to be a catastrophic idea, and they're immediately out of contention. So, as I know this is sort of a subject close to Alex's heart, testing is so frustrating because you don't know. The teams don't give anything away, and even with the official timing data, you don't know fuel runs, engine modes, tyre life necessarily. It's so hard to work out. But generally, I think over the past few years we've been doing this, when it's a complete disaster, you get a rough idea. So, so whether there is anything coming out of Ferrari or whether Aston Martin has suddenly toned down about their having a flying start. So you immediately think, right, Alonso, I've seen him chatting to Toto Wolff, this is definitely on now for 2025. Just a few things like that, where they start to slot into place.
On the Red Bull thing, I would go as far as saying that Red Bull saved launch season by doing something sort of different, like something unexpected. And it also means the narrative of testing is suddenly like, oh, is it good or is it bad? Like it's not just, yeah, Red Bull were very, very strong. They didn't do anything until the last, you know, performance runs at the very end of the third day in the night. And then, oh, yeah, we know they're quickest. It's suddenly like, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Like there's clues you can pick up all the way through testing. Like, for example, Matt, you and I were out watching that double apex left, what is it, turns 9 and 10 at Bahrain. And Sergio Perez on the second morning was just off the road every single time, or locking up and not hitting either apex. Like, not that he hit the first one on the way in, but you know what I mean? Like they tried to spin it off as, oh, no, his times are still good. But yeah, he looked so uncomfortable in the car. And what happened in the season? He never got to grips with it, really, other than the sort of the relative high points of the start of the year. So yeah, as I said, I think at a stroke, Red Bull doing that suddenly makes testing and obviously the end of launch season more interesting.
Now, we are near the end of the podcast, but before we get to it, I'm going to fire some questions to you quickly. Quick fire answers, sort of. I'll start with you on this one, JBL. Which teams, or which team, if you could pick one, are you going to be the most surprised about come testing, do you think, predicting wise, and why?
Oh, good question. I'm just going to say Williams. I reckon they'll take another step and maybe somehow push into that sort of group of top five teams during the battle. Maybe Alex Albon gets a podium this season. I'm just going to say that.
Can I go with RB? It just puts me in mind of that. You know the scene at the end of the first Incredibles movie where Dash is doing the sports day and they're like, speed up, no, slow down, whether they have to sort of do that effectively, because, you know, there is a chance they could jump from eighth to like actually almost do themselves no favours by being particularly competitive and put the scrutiny on that team. But, you know, if they do well, it helps justify their existence. So see where they slot in, you know, although they the FIA found them to be fully compliant. Obviously, McLaren have got a massive bee in their bonnet. And if they're good enough, other teams will suddenly have a huge bee in their bonnet about RB. So I think that could be an interesting team.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. What about quote of the launch? I know that a couple of you have mentioned things that people have said, but quote of the launch, either from a driver's from team or from maybe another journalist to you about things that you've seen or witnessed while you've been, you know, going about your daily jobs, earning your crust. Alex?
I think everything Fernando Alonso wanted to say. He's scoring better tests now than he ever has been. So what, were you not training hard enough in your mid-20s when you're winning your world titles? The brilliant I don't care about Lewis Hamilton. And then 5 seconds later, oh, it wasn't his boyhood dream last year to go to Ferrari, was it? Or all the stuff that he wanted to say. I think, I've said this, I've put this in so many columns. I hope he does, not this bit, but the next bit I'm going to say, I hope he does race until he's 50, because Formula One is such a better place with Fernando Alonso in it.
For me, I have to say, Alex, when I was interviewing John Noble about the Vegas launch, he had to look through his notes to who the rappers were because he couldn't quite remember their names. And that, for me, is one of the best moments I've seen. You know, John Noble just trying to grapple with the names. He got them. I can't remember their names, so I can't even, you know. What was it? Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar, yeah.
Right. And I thought, And it was just quite funny to have, you know, John Noble just trying to scrabble for the name of Kendrick Lamar. It just made me chuckle a fair bit because, you know, these are people that presumably John Noble doesn't listen to on a daily basis. He might do, but I can't imagine that's what he tunes into when he gets in his car on a Thursday morning.
I'm definitely not listening to them. I'm currently re-listening to the Hamilton soundtrack because I saw that for the first time a few weeks ago. So there we go.
Lovely stuff. Lovely. Matt?
I was going to say, I think my moment is actually probably the Red Bull launch, just because a room of, let's not say the invited guests, but of the media, you know, if there were 50 of us, us all instantly turning into psychiatrists and body language experts. One, because, you know, basically see how Horner reacts, his first high profile public outing, see what he would say, do, how he looked. And also, you know, we know there's a bit of tension in that technical team between Adrian Newey and Pierre Vacher. So who does the most work, who actually gets the credit for that? And them being, you know, I thought a bit uncomfortable with each other on stage. I just found that amusing. So just reading people and how they interact with others at the Red Bull launch, that was a good dynamic.
poor JBL didn't get to go to any launches. He's only got things, you know, that he's heard through hearsay or that he's read.
I don't mind that. I've done my fair share of launches before, so it's just been nice to relax a little bit. Not that any of it has been relaxing at all. Honestly, nothing stood out to me. It's not like, when was it, 2011, when the HRT was released to the world and team principal Colin Collis said, well, it looks like a Formula One car. We've not had any of that. So from pure humour factor, I don't think I have anything. But I was quite, again, I found it quite amusing that the McLaren boys took aim at Red Bull for having their car leaked online before it was even launched. Piastri sort of stuck a foot in with that and talking in his sort of very deadpan Australian humour. So that was quite amusing. But yeah, it's been nothing standout, nothing ridiculous. It's all been very low-key, softly.
I enjoy Ferrari trying to say we're not gonna, Fred's gonna talk now and then he's gonna say something about Lewis Hamilton and then you may not ask any questions about Lewis Hamilton, and then the first one immediately was a question about Lewis Hamilton, which he then answered. So yeah.
Well, you know, it's nice that he even bothered. Actually, I thought Lewis Hamilton's wordings, that's an interesting way of saying it. What Lewis Hamilton said about, you know, how we and our and us and things, it's from Mercedes, and you know, come halfway through the season, that's, he's still going to be saying it, but he's not privy to any of the conversations from a certain point of the year. So, you know, there is going to be a change in dynamic within that team. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. And you guys will be across it, of course. Now, before we wrap this up, we are now fast approaching testing, as we know, next week. What are you all looking forward to the most this season? Out of anything, I'm going to start with you. No time to think. Matt, I was going to start with JBL, but I know he'll take a time to think. So, Matt.
Not staying at the Kmart Hotel rooms and suites.
Wait, that's where I'm staying, in Jeddah?
Oh, what was the one? What was the
you mean the Bahrain one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You were upset about that, weren't you?
Yeah. I think... Going trackside at testing sort of feels particularly special because you effectively have the venue to yourself if you go to the right corner and you're willing to walk away a bit. You know, you are more than ever trying to sort of microanalyze to see what's going on, because the reality is, you know, by the time you get to race 2021, you know, the cars are set in stone, but there's a genuine bit of jeopardy. Are there early indications? And it is, yeah, it's a sort of, you know, F1 can be incredibly tough to cover. I know it seems like a life of luxury. It can be incredibly tough to cover. So that is an undoubted privilege, is basically having a track to yourself, watching these cars get up and close and personal. And okay, there's been a bit of proliferation of the, you know, coverage of everything, with Sky now being there and having rolling coverage, and I'm sure that's good for some people, but it does feel ever so slightly sort of behind closed doors and shrouded in secrecy, and that you might spot something before other people. It, you know, very rarely happens, but that it feels a bit naughty to be there, almost like you've snuck in under the radar, and I like that. I don't know what that says about me, but I like the sense of feeling naughty.
Can we just use that as a quote for this entire podcast, where Matt Q says, I like being naughty, or the feeling of being naughty, just have that as the only soundbite for the entire thing. JBL, I've given you a moment to think now, so what are you looking forward to the most?
This season generally, I think I'm looking forward to going to the Australian Grand Prix, because I think that's the first one I ever remember watching. My dad waking me up early when I was 5 or 6 and throwing me in front of the TV and watching, you know, Michael Schumacher and Eddie Irvine and Heinz-Harald Frentzen and all of that caliber of driver, McCacken, obviously. So that would be quite a cool experience. I think generally this season, I'm just looking forward to, and it's a bit of a nebulous concept because we don't know whether it will happen or not, but just something a little bit more exciting, I think. And I think, you know, we've kind of touched upon the idea of converging cars and converging philosophies, and hopefully a lot more teams will have a chance to win. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I don't know whether that'll happen, but I'm hoping that we see a few different drivers in top positions. And yeah, just looking forward to getting going again. And as Matt said, having a little bit of time trackside, because that's one of the sort of joys of our job, just FP1, leave the report with somebody else and just stand there and kind of luxuriate, I guess, in watching 20 of the world's best drivers sort of tentatively make their way around a circuit. It's genuinely quite liberating.
Yeah, 20, no more. 20, that's the maximum. Alex?
Yeah, I think for me, it's another first race to go to. I've been doing Formula One, been Formula One correspondent for this is my fifth season. But obviously, because of the pandemic and the way we split up travel in terms of, it used to be Matt and I, now it's me and JBL. It's one goes, one comes home. So he'll stay out of the desk for Bahrain, as we've discovered, and then as we've covered already. And then he'll come home and I'll go to Saudi Arabia. But yeah, so basically because of all of that, I haven't yet done the Japanese Grand Prix. And I'm really looking forward to that because, again, like JBL said, that sort of bucket list stuff, that's like, you know, you remember getting up at 4 a.m. when Michael Schumacher was about to stall on the grid in 97. And he's like, oh, I was absolutely devastated by that, massive Ferrari fan when I was little. But yeah, so yeah, little things like that, well, actually, considering it's going to Japan, it's actually quite a big thing. And again, just the track side, just standing at some really, really famous corners that I've already always wanted to see and are so familiar from TV. So that's what I am personally most looking forward to this year.
Well, it all sounds like you're in a positive frame of mind, which is great, and we can't wait to see what happens in testing next time. Look, gents, thank you so much. For me, I'm hoping that we're just going to see a gap close between Red Bull and the others this season, and maybe even look forward to a different champion come 2025. I think that maybe it's a nail on for Red Bull this year, but we'll have to wait and see. But listen, chaps, thank you so much for all your time in this lengthy podcast, you know, taking the time to talk all things Formula One. As you mentioned, next week is pre-season testing, so make sure you check back with us, as these guys, the three musketeers, are going to be uncovering all the news that you need to know. So thanks once again for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.